This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome back to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on Hot Consumer Topics USA. I am joined by Peter Holland from the Holland Law Firm from Maryland in the USA. Peter is a leading consumer rights lawyer licensed in the state of Maryland who frequently co-counsels cases and class action lawsuits across the United States involving consumer rights. He took a 5-year break from his 25 years in private practice when he ran a consumer protection clinic at a US law school. While teaching at the law school, he published several groundbreaking articles which have been cited by scholars and courts, including in the United States Supreme Court. Peter, it's so good to see you on my Zoom. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to be here.
It just seems like not that long ago we did the last podcast, but you said something, and I am going to repeat it because I think it's brilliant. I was just talking about how my children are probably aging me. And you said the days are long, but the years are short. And I have to say, it does feel like that sometimes.
Yeah, you know, I can't remember where I heard that, but somebody told me that a few years ago. And I feel like I repeat that to myself almost on a daily basis. Because it's so true. Well, we're pulling our hair out with whether it's our kids or our career. And then you look back and suddenly, you know, your kids are older. So just remember that.
Peter, I've written it down, and I have to say it's going to be one that I will probably repeat myself. Yeah. Right. Credit reports, medical debt, car loans and repossessions and identity theft are all major issues in the US. Statistics show that some 45 million Americans do not have a credit score, with credit files often containing errors. It has been reported that some 50% of Americans now carry medical debt, with over $195 billion being owed. Car loans are the third largest consumer credit in the US, with over $1.4 trillion outstanding. The yearly repossession rates amount to a staggering 65%. In other words, around 226 vehicle repossessions per hour. And this is a shocker. The Federal Trade Commission, also known as the FTC, says that 33% of US citizens have experienced identity theft, with 1 million child identity theft incidents in the year of 2020 alone. In today's episode, Peter and I will be bringing you key points on how to navigate and get assistance with these challenging areas in plain and simple English. Right, Peter, I'm going to start with credit reports because I tell you, I don't think I know anybody, as a young adult even, that doesn't think, oh yes, I better look into that. What is it all about? So we hear a lot about problems with personal credit reports. I had my fair share too, and I have to tell you, in the UK, I actually had to take, and I won't name who it was, but one of the largest credit report providers to court twice myself for incorrect entries in my credit report that affected me massively and dramatically in my finances. I mean, these documents have a massive impact on our lives, given that providers of consumer credit, reports to lenders, insurance providers, employers and other companies who use credit information to help, you know, predict their risk. Can you tell me what has been the main issue that people have been faced with?
Yeah. What we see is an array. There's about a 26% error rate in the U.S. on credit reports. That means one in four people, if they pull their credit report, they may find an error.
And that's a big number there. What you just said there, one in four. When you hear it like that, you think this is a big issue, big problem.
This is a huge, huge issue, huge. In the U.S., there are three major credit reports, TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax, but there are literally over 100 smaller consumer reporting agencies that specialize in such things as landlord-tenant, medical. There's even one that does gambling debts, a special credit reporting bureau for checking out the backgrounds of gamblers.
That's interesting. So you can go to certain niche credit reporting companies, should we say, so if only to see how they have been as a tenant, how creditworthy they are as a tenant. That's really interesting, because in the UK, we've got Equifax and Experian are the big boys here, and actually they're supposed to be the biggest across the globe. But that's very interesting that you've got the main credit reporters and then smaller ones that have niche sectors reporting.
Smaller niche ones, and then there's the smaller ones that are essentially middlemen that contract with the larger ones to do things like an employment background check. Okay, they may be checking a number of places, but they'll also be checking one of those big three. In any event, huge error rate. Everything from a mixed file. So guess what? In the globe, in the UK and in the globe, since we're talking global, there's more than one Hattie Savari. There's more than one Peter Holland. So getting those files mixed, old accounts, identity theft, and just the basic inaccurate information. Maybe they say the balance on your loan is $10,000 and it's really $5,000 or $1,000. In the U.S., you know, what the law is under the Fair Credit Reporting Act is that they have to have procedures in place to ensure the maximum possible accuracy of the information. With a 26% error rate, you could question whether they have those procedures in place.
Well, the CNBC reported that 34% of Americans have at least one error in their credit report. That's a lot. That's over a third of the population that choose to have a credit report, have a credit report.
Right. And what's really important, what you just said there, is that choose to have a credit report. This is the thing. We can't choose.
You're right. You're right when you say that.
Have a report or not. These creditors and credit reporting bureaus, they are taking your information involuntarily and selling it for a profit to third parties. Like a lender, if you want a car loan or a mortgage or a student loan, they are going to pull your credit report. If you don't have a credit report, that's also not a good thing, because the system bases it on what is your score with that credit report. And when you think about that, 34% error rate, or the more popular number thrown around is the 26% error rate. It's just a huge thing. And so you could apply for credit tomorrow and get denied credit. And if you don't pursue it, they're supposed to tell you why you were denied. But if you don't pursue it, you may have accounts on there that are simply inaccurate. And before you know it, it snowballs into a bigger problem. We represent people here at the Holland Law Firm that literally have been sued on debts that were never theirs to begin with. It was identity theft. That's insane.
I mean, I get the identity theft thing, okay, but when you're saying that the company that's actually owed the funds is being told, that's not me. I didn't take out that debt. That's an identity theft. I've reported it to the police. I've sought legal help or legal advice, and the company still pursues to sue that individual. I mean, I know they have to be sure, but...
That is correct. That actually leads to one of my other favorite sayings, which is even innocent people say they're innocent, right? Because the creditors say, well, everybody says it's not me, it's not my debt, right? In the criminal law, you know, somebody else did it. But, you know, when they say it's not me over and over again and it falls on deaf ears, where it ends up is in the court in a lawsuit. And we have literally represented people here at the Holland Law Firm. It was never their debt. The creditor would never listen. And it goes all the way to a trial in court. And you have to prove your innocence, in effect. And the point about that is those debts are also being reported on your credit report, so that when you go to get a loan or a job, they'll say, we're not going to make you a loan, or it's going to be at a very high interest rate because you have all of this other money that you owe. I had somebody I represented who literally applied for a job, and the credit report came back saying that the person, it was highly suspected they were using a fraudulent social security number. They weren't. And the the job offer said, look, we understand that you're an honest person and we know you would never use a fraudulent number, but we can't hire you unless and until you fix this problem. And they couldn't fix the problem. So, you know, the Holland Law Firm, we stepped in and we got it fixed, but only through the litigation process.
And that costs money and that's stress and that's time. Because let me tell you, like it happened personally to me, I only became aware that there was an issue when, like you say, in your instance, the job offer, the credit search, when there was a credit search and I was told your credit report, your credit score, as we say, was not sufficient. And I think, well, why? And it's usually when you're at the pinnacle point of doing something. And in that case, you just explained somebody was going to get a job. But it could be to buy a home. It could be to consolidate your debts. It could be to lower the interest rate on your debts on your home. And these are big things that occur to people where, and I have to say, my experience, and you can probably tell me that as well, it takes a long time to try and battle these things as an individual. So when you go to seek help, would you say it speeds up the process, Peter? And does the other party who loses end up paying the legal fees of the person that's saying, look, I've got to take this to court to sort it out, or I've got to defend it to sort it out?
Right. So the short answer to your two questions is yes and yes. But let me say, self-help is always, you know, the good first step. And under we have in the U.S. the Fair Credit Reporting Act. And the emphasis is on the word fair there. It's supposed to be fair and the information is supposed to be accurate. Having said that, it's a very arcane and complex statute.
What, the law? Archaic? You're kidding me, right? It's mad archaic.
But the first step is to pull your credit report regularly. In the U.S., we have a website that was sanctioned by the government. It's called annualcreditreport.com, www.annualcreditreport.com. And you go to that website and you can pull each of your three credit reports from the three major credit bureaus, which is Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. And then the next thing you do is you read it and you say, do I recognize all of these accounts? Are the balances accurate, et cetera? And so you look at it to make sure it's accurate. And if it's not accurate, okay, step one is a person can dispute it on their own. It should always be in writing. You should always save proof that you mailed it to them. I like certified mail myself. And then if they can't fix it, that's when really it's time to talk to a lawyer.
Yes.
And a lawyer has a little more experience with that complex and arcane statute. And a lawyer can usually, through filing a lawsuit, through the litigation process, if it's wrong, it can be fixed. And yes, attorney's fees can be covered. You know, the other side end up paying your
attorney's fees. The losing party. I mean, interestingly, apparently the most three common errors that appear on credit reports are wrong addresses, misspelled names, and wrong names. And when I read wrong names, I thought, well, hold on. I can understand the misspelled name, but I really don't understand the whole it's a wrong name. Because if it's a wrong name, then it can't be you. But then I guess they link it to your address, link it to your date of birth, and other personal matters. Okay, got it. Let's move on to medical debt, because we also hear about crushing medical debt in the US. And how is medical debt affecting everyday people? And is there any help in the legal space for people to tap into? Because I mean, when you don't pay your medical bills, people face the possibility of a lower credit score. It's linked to what we were saying earlier, although what we were saying earlier was, you know, issues with credit score, garnished wages, liens and charges on their property, and even money in their bank accounts being frozen or deducted. Where can people go for help? Because this seems like a seriously fast growing problem in the US.
It is a fast growing problem. And similar to what we discussed with credit reports and identity theft and car loans, the thing about medical debt is you do not have a choice. If you have a heart attack or you have cancer or you break your leg, you must go to the hospital. You don't pick and choose and say, yes, I would like that flat screen TV. You know, that's a choice. Or I want the new stereo. Medical debt, we don't have a choice. And so it's unique in that sense. And you don't have really control over it. It's a huge problem in this country. Hospitals, when you look at debt collection lawsuits in some communities, hospitals are the largest debt collectors out there.
Wow.
You're supposed to have, you know, we all in the U.S., you know, health insurance, charity care, things like that. But at the end of the day, someone who's faced with a catastrophic medical bill of, you know, $250,000, $350,000 if they had catastrophic health care, that's at the one end of the spectrum. And then at the other end of the spectrum is there's a lot of errors, like in everything else. And there's people that have been pursued over $131. I just read an article, $131 medical debt that ends up going to court and a lawsuit.
Surely they should be setting up, surely the legal system should have a place where it's not quite court. And it's a bit like in the UK, for example, we've got what's called the Ombudsman. And the Ombudsman is an independent source that tries to resolve disputes. And then we have mediation that you try to tap into before it ends up in a courtroom. But are you telling me that companies or hospitals drag people to court for $131?
I am telling you that. I have seen it. I have seen people's wages frozen, getting back to the credit report theme. I've seen people, and where it's the wrong person, it's the wrong Hattie Savari whose wages they freeze.
When you're sitting there, Peter, representing people and getting them out of these holes, because obviously they're holes that they can't get themselves out of, they've had to seek legal advice. I mean, commercially, it has zero viability in terms of what the legal fees are going to be versus, and I'm just taking the $131 example. Isn't the judge furious that has ended up there?
Well, they can be, and they are when their attention is called to it. But you have to keep in mind that people being sued for $131, that may be part of a vast sea of people that day being sued for small amounts of money, 99% of whom are not going to be represented by a lawyer. So it just kind of gets passed through the system. There was one study that was done in the U.S. here. It was called rubber stamp justice. You know, small claims, relatively small amounts of money get kind of pushed through the system. Nobody's going to hire a lawyer over $131, right? And so they just kind of get pushed through. And it's not like the court has the time to really scrutinize every single case when there's tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of them being moved through.
So does the Holland law firm assist people that are being wrongly chased for medical debt, or is there any other help perhaps around if you have medical debt and if it is a substantial amount or a substantial amount to you? You know, it could be $5,000 that just feels substantial enough for you. Is there ways of, for example, going to court to agree a payment plan that is affordable within your, you know, within and in line with what you earn? Is that what somebody could look at doing rather than trying to battle it out with the hospital of what they can afford to pay and what they should pay?
Right. So the answer is yes. The Holland Law Firm, we represent a lot of people who are being pursued for debt that they literally don't owe. Again, because it's identity theft. And by the way, medical identity theft is a huge problem. There are a lot of people that will go in and get medical care and then somehow get it billed to, you know, a fraudulent billing. But we represent people that are being pursued and they don't owe it. But there are a lot of other options, even if you do owe it. Yes, we do have ombudsman here. Since medical debt is such a problem in the U.S., there's also a big reform movement going on, and like most hospitals are nonprofit and they're supposed to engage in charity care for certain, you know, segments. And the question is, well, have they always been doing that? Have they always been complying with their obligation? So as more of this kind of problem gets exposed, there are some reforms. Charity care is one that they really have to do that. They have ombudsman. Your state attorney general in the U.S. is a great place to look. You can look on our website. We have lots of resources on medical debt, and that's just www.hollandlawfirm.com, H-O-L-L-A-N-D, lawfirm.com. We have lots of resources.
I mean, you just said something that opens, that's a, probably a completely new podcast in itself, but hospitals, I certainly didn't know that, they have to run as a non-profit and carry out a certain amount of charity. I mean, we call that pro bono in the UK, work, where they're doing work for £0 in return because they're supporting the problem
well,
as a charity.
Let me call it something different. I call it a trade-off, because if they're a nonprofit, their taxes are really diminished, right? They're not paying the taxes that a private corporation would. And so part of the trade-off is, if you're not paying the taxes and you're working in the public interest like that and getting that benefit, then you have an obligation to give back through charity care.
And
so there's regulations on that.
Just out of interest, do we know who measures that, as you say, who actually looks into that to say, yes, this hospital institution is actually doing lots by way of charitable work in order to warrant the fact that they're a non-profit? Are there government bodies that measure and keep these giant organisations, hospitals and caregivers and care institutions, keep them in check?
Yes. So the short answer is yes, there are reporting requirements. I'm in the state of Maryland, and we have, you know, a state regulatory oversight body, and all those reports are supposed to be made. But because you use the word giant, these are giant corporations. A lot has fallen through the cracks over the decades. And I do believe that in the U.S. today, there is a reform movement. This problem has really become well in the public eye. People, you know, you talked about jobs and stuff. I'm talking about bankruptcy. I'm talking about homelessness on these large debts. And, you know, bankruptcy in this country, study after study shows that bankruptcies by consumers are caused for one of three reasons. Divorce, job loss, and medical debt, a health crisis.
That actually is one of the three big ones, right?
Yes.
I mean, I can get divorce and I can get job loss, of course, your loss of your income. But medical debt, surely that should be happening in this day and age.
It shouldn't, but it does. That's what study after study shows. So that's the bad news. The good news is there is genuinely a reform movement afoot in the U.S., but it's going to be a long time coming till.
Well, I think the long and short of it is, if firstly and foremost, if you are being chased for medical debt that does not belong to you and you are not able to try and sort that out between the hospital or caregiver that's chasing you and yourself, get quick advice and assistance, because like we said, it has that knock-on effect on your credit report, and then that has the knock-on effect in some shape or form. It could be when your credit card, you know, interest rate is up for renewal. You know,
right.
And they think, oh, right, well, your credit rating was great beforehand, but now it's not. And all of a sudden, you're paying double the interest rate, or even worse, they can say, well, we're going to refuse you a renewal card this year because your debt position has risen up. So I would say, absolutely, get help, which moves us on to another area, car loans and repossessions. I mean, there's no doubt that as a result of the pandemic and the Russian-Ukrainian war, that all has been unfortunately affected. The whole world has, the USA and globally. Cars have become so much more expensive to purchase and own, and actually to even get. New car delivery times, for example, in the UK of 12 months plus, leaving people to seek predatory car lenders to be able to get themselves into a vehicle. What has been the main issue with loan shark borrowing that you're aware of, Peter? And I mean, I know the US is a very big country, you know, with a population of over 330 million people, but it's still astonishing to read that yearly repossession rates of vehicles due to non-payment of car loans amounts to a staggering 65% of cars that have loans. I still find that's extraordinary.
Yeah, so... The problem of car loans and repossessions, candidly, goes back way before the pandemic, okay? The fact is, in the U.S., it is very expensive to be poor in this country.
That's a big statement.
Yes, and it's a very true statement, because the way that loans and interest rates are is the higher the credit risk you are, the more interest they charge.
It's the same. It's the same in the UK. And I've never been able to work that out, in the sense that the less you can afford, the more they want you to pay back.
Right. And I'm going to give you a pro tip in just a minute for your listeners. But So here's the thing. If you or I, and I actually am looking for a car right now, and I'm looking, so the prime rate, what the rate, you know, that someone like me is going to get is, I believe right now, and they've gone up somewhere between like 2% and 4%, okay, interest rate. I have been representing for decades people that don't have a good job, don't have a solid credit history, don't have a high income, and for them, it's 24%.
Wow.
I have represented decades, single parent, head of household. They go to buy a car because they must have a car to get to and
from work. It's more than a credit card in some instances, more than a loan.
Yes. And so they're getting the worst cars with the highest mileage, the worst repair rates, and the highest interest rate. And so it's no surprise that someone paying 24% interest on a used car that maybe doesn't run so well is going to stop paying. They can't afford it, or the car breaks down and they say, I'm not going to keep paying on a car that doesn't run. So the pro tip I want to get is, don't ever, ever finance through a car dealer as your first option. In the US, if you look at car ads, you know, they say, nobody refused, or so-and-so says yes, you know, come in, you know, nobody denied credit. So what they're really selling is not cars. The dirty little secret is, car dealers don't really make much money on the metal, as it's called. They don't make much money on the car. They make it on the financing. And the way they make it on the financing is, you will go and they'll shop your credit profile to several different lenders. And oftentimes, rather than getting the lowest rate lender, they will give you the highest rate lender. Say, great news, we got you, you know, a loan. It's only 24%. But we, you know, spoiler alert, we also got it approved at a much lower rate. But by giving you the higher rate, they're going to get
more
some
commission,
kind of a kickback. They're going to get some money on the back end. So what you always want to do is, just as if you were buying a house or any other large purchase, go to your bank, go to your credit union, and just apply and say, how much do I qualify for? And they will tell you, and you will get a lower interest rate than you would get at a car dealership. And you'll know. And that way, when you go to the dealer, you're only shopping the cash price of the car, and you're not going to be subject to all of the tricks that can go on.
I think that's a golden tip, because naturally, I mean, not many people change cars every 2, 3, or 4 years. We're kind of trying to hold on to cars for as long as we can, as long as we have to, etc. And you do automatically, for some reason, trust the garage that you're buying your car from. You just trust the car dealer, you trust the garage, and you think, and they're so, I have to say, car salesmen are probably still very, very good in the trade. You know, they just, and you're excited. It's a happy buy, isn't it?
Yeah, they're the whole psychology of that.
So
are expert. They are expert, and you are a novice. I don't care how educated you are. When you walk onto a car lot, oftentimes, if you're dealing with real pros on the other side, you know, they have control and they have scripted everything.
And you're excited. You're excited about the purchase of that vehicle. And it is very likely that you get lured into, as you say, they give you the call. We'll call you tomorrow to see if we can get the credit, or just take a seat and we'll have a look.
I often, when I get a call on somebody with a car fraud case, I'll say, stop, let me tell you the rest of your story.
Oh, God. Tell me about that, because you just mentioned something. Car fraud, you said, right?
Yeah.
So how does that happen?
Well, it's kind of part of the same mix, but, you know, I'll say, let me tell you the rest of your story. And I'll say, you got there at 5 p.m. and you left at 9 p.m. as the lights were being turned out. And they're like, how did you know that? And you didn't have anything to eat. You had nothing to drink, because it's a war of attrition. Once they know that they have a fish on the line and hooked, if they can drag it out, they wear you down, and then they throw in the things like the upholstery protection for $500, or the rust guard, or, you know, all of the add-ons that are just added profit. In fact, they used to have a line here in the U.S. called ADP at the end, and that stood for added dealer profit. Nobody asked what ADP stood for.
Gosh, if you're going into a car showroom and you're being sold these items, and you're willingly, whether you're tired, you're exhausted, excited about your purchase, you know, not really clued up on how to do these things. Right. If you say yes as a consumer and you buy into it all and then you can't afford to pay it, that's not fraud, right? Because you're agreeing ultimately in sane mind.
Right. They're trying to get you to yes when you're tired and worn down. That's true. That wouldn't be fraud, you know, on the surface of it. But I mean, I've had cases where the fraud is at the 9 o'clock hour, what they ended up giving you was a used car that they sold as new.
Oh, God. I mean, that's a people have done that?
Yes, I have had a case. I've had more than one case. A used car sold as new.
Oh,
or a prior rental car sold as just used and not disclosed. So
I mean,
all kinds of tricks.
There needs to be more regulation over what actually is warranted as the right decent amount or the highest interest rate that can be charged in these circumstances. It will be music to my ears when some federal government body says, right, we're now going to cap credit card interest rates to 15%. We're going to cap car loan interest rates to, you know, 7% or something like that. I mean, perhaps the corporate world is just too big and too robust and we're never going to see it, Peter. But I mean, again, the good news is if you feel there has been an unfair, and when I use the word unfair, we all interpret terms differently, don't we? I could sit here and say, well, that wasn't fair. But in the eyes of the law, it was perfectly fair and reasonable. But if you feel you've been taken for, a ride, a real ride when purchasing a car, then seek some initial legal assistance just to see whether what you're thinking and what the law says can be married up as something that, you know, to put anybody that's taken you for granted or did something they shouldn't do in their right place. Now, we've literally got a minute, and I know we said identity theft and we've really been repeating that, and that this is one of the things that's coming out of this is how much identity theft goes on and in what forms. But what I couldn't understand was why has there been over 1 million child identity thefts in the US? Why does that happen? It baffles me why fraudsters would go under child identity theft, but because they're not even able to get credit. But then I guess they're using the credentials, perhaps changing the date,
right,
and off they go, right?
Yeah, I think it's a complex answer, but yeah, it's a clean slate, if you will. And so it maybe is easier from that regard. And I have spoken to a lot of adults who have admitted to me that, you know, they discovered when they became an adult that their parent had been using their identity.
Oh, gosh. Oh, and that still is fraud, because even though you're the parent or guardian, you cannot use somebody else's details, even if it is your child, to pretend that they are able to do left, right and center, whatever it is. But it's a big issue, and it's all entwined. But again, I say it, taking some early advice can be golden. You know, paying $100 or $200 for a telephone consultation just to say, look, I've got these things going on. This is where I am. Here's my papers. Here's my evidence. Here's what I'm thinking. Do you think there's any merit here to get me out of trouble or get me out of this place? I think it's really worth doing.
I think that's exactly right. And at the Holland Law Firm, that's exactly what we do. We have a very easy intake form on our website, hollandlawfirm.com, and people can submit the information. We may ask for more documents, and we can really look at it, look at the paperwork, and then set up a formal consultation to say, we've reviewed the papers, we've seen the facts you submitted, and here is what the landscape looks like, and here's what your options are, and here's how we may be able to help you.
I would really, really recommend that, because just spending $100 or a couple of $100 to start off with, and I don't know what you charge for telephone consultations, Peter, but I guess it's based on the scale of the issue that you're being faced with, is so worth doing, because it could save you so much stress, money through any identity theft or fraud or wrongdoing by any large company, whether it's, you know, a charitable hospital or a creditor, or be it a car loan or in whichever form. The cost to you financially, if it did spiral out of control and it went on for a very long time and affected your life, could and very likely would be a lot more. But Peter, that's all we've got time for.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on this podcast. So thank you for your time today. And what I'll say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcast. And you can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.